fling it in the hole.
And make
that's right, and make your free. Principal Parts of Pharaoh. Well, welcome to Greek Club here at Concordia Seminary. Let's see, we are broadcasting today from high atop Theology of the Cross Tower. I think we've got holes in this. No, we don't have holes in the ceiling. We're very plush, and we're warm because it's no longer Canadian temperatures here in St. Louis, so we're grateful for that. I think it's going to get up to freezing today. 32 is the forecast, yeah. So, and we are reading Hebrews chapter 10, and we read through verse 28 last time. We'll keep it a little bit shorter today because I'm taking part in this conference over on the west side of town. So we're at Hebrews 10, and verse 28 is kind of the first part of the comparison from the lesser to the greater that the writer to the Hebrews likes to engage in. That is, he says in verse 28, someone, after nullifying the law of Moses, apart from mercies at the two or three testimonies, dies. So, in other words, to violate the will of God, the commandments of the first covenant, if I could use that term, was bad enough. And then verse 29, interestingly, it's even worse to neglect or spurn the gift of the new covenant. So that's verse 29 is going to be the, on the other hand, even though it's not a mandate. So let's just read that, verse 29, and then we'll get that in front of us in Greek. There's a little parenthetical comment that you don't often see in the New Testament, at least. So verse 29, we have puzo doketa, kerenos axiothesitai timorias ha, tan huion tu theu, katapatezas, take a deep breath and keep going, kai tahaima tes diathekes koinon hegezamenos, and ho hegiaste, keep going, kai ta pneuma tes karatas en ubrisas, question. And we know it's a question because of the first word, puzzas, or puzzo. Again, an interrogative word, by how much? By, because it's in the dative. So puzzas means how much or how great. And it's asking a question, and when it's in the dative, we'll take it as the dative of means. By how much? Now, doketa, actually, you have to deal with that by taking it as a little parenthetical comment. Do you think? Doketo means to think or seem or suppose. So, by how much, parentheses, do you think? Now, okay, we'll just look for the verb. That's not too hard to find. Axiothesitai. Axio means to regard as worthy, or to count as worthy. This is a future indicative passive. So someone will be worthy of something, right? And now we look for the subject. Okay, here's where you have to take a deep breath. The subject starts with the article ha, and it goes through the end of the verse. Okay? It's three participles that are all governed by one article and everything that goes with them. So, the, skip four words, trampling one. And what is he trampling? Tan huion tu theu, accusative case, right? The one who has trampled the Son of God, and skip five or six words and go to hege samanas. This is from hegeomai, its deponent. It means to regard something as. So the same article, it's article, participle, and participle, and participle, okay? So this is actually a very long example of this kind of construction. So the one who has trampled the Son of God and hegesamenos, aorist participle, middle deponent, who regarded, now back up and pick up ta haima, which is accusative, blood, and who regarded the blood of the covenant common, okay, or as something common. And which blood is that? by which he was sanctified, en ho hagiaste, from hagiazo, right? Aorist indicative passive. Now, we're not done yet. And then the last word in the verse is en eubridzo is the verb. It means to insult, okay? We actually get our word hubris from this, our English word hubris, which means pride or arrogance. So the basic verb is hubridzo, and this is just en hubridzo. So it means to treat arrogantly or to insult. And what did you insult? Ta pneuma tes charitos, the spirit of grace, right? Or the gracious spirit, reference probably to the Holy Spirit, right? So that that's the subject of the verb oxiothesetai. And oxiao takes a genitive direct object. So cheronos on the front of it and timorios on the back of it is the subject. So will be worthy of a cheron is from kakos. It's the comparative. It's completely irregular. Kakos is bad. Cheron is worse. Okay? And a timoria is a punishment. So when you put all that together, you you come up with, by how much do you think? Now, the subject is, the one who tramples the Son of God and regards the blood of the covenant as common by which he was sanctified and insults the Spirit of grace will be regarded worthy of worse punishment. That's how the sentence works. So it's a very large subject, if I could say it that way, about, I don't know, 25 or 30 words. But the basic sentence structure is essentially simple, right? But it's interesting, I mean, and this is good for Lutherans. We're going to come up to this in chapter 12, a text which I've heard mispreached, because the argument of the writer to the Hebrews is both positive and negative. Look, there were sacrifices for sins, but they could never completely cleanse, see? Only the greater once for all sacrifice. So in a positive sense, good, better, right? But he does it also in a law hortatory warning sense where he says, you think it was bad to neglect that salvation. It's worse to neglect this one. So there's a kind of an interesting urgency to his message. And, of course, it makes sense in the original context, especially because somehow we don't know the particulars at all. Somehow the congregation, the readers, the hearers of this letter are being tempted to drift back into depending upon, you know, what apparently is still going on. That is the Old Testament sacrificial system, you know. So they're being pulled back into Judaism, possibly in the diaspora somewhere. We don't actually know too much about, you know, about the audience to the Hebrews. So that's the sentence, which is 29. It's subject, verb. But, man, it's a big subject. And it's a little bit difficult until you've got to hold your breath until you get it all in there. So questions about anything in the world there in those lines. Yeah, kata pata, those are all aorist participles. I don't think I mentioned that. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I was trying to think. I forgot to look it up. If spirit of grace, if that phrase occurs anywhere else. So we have Son of God, blood of the covenant, spirit of grace, right? So could be, again, what you might call a Hebraic genitive, kind of like bread of life, which is life-giving bread, spirit of grace, gracious spirit, right? Something like that. So, all right. Well, and now the writer wants to support this contention that it would be such a one to be worthy of a worse punishment with a gar sentence, right? That's how verse 30 starts. So he writes, oidemen gar tan epanta, emoi etikesis ego anta padozo kai palin krene kyrios tan laan autu. And then we'll pick up verse 31 as well. It's short. Fabaran ta empezain es keras theou zontas. So verse 30, our friend oida, of course, we know is it's actually perfect in form. It's from eido, epsilon iota delta omega, but it only occurs in this verb only occurs. It doesn't occur in the present indicative, but the perfect indicative functions as the present indicative. So just we know. For we know the one who said, and apontos is just the aorist participle of lego. That's easy enough. And what did God say? And now he quotes Deuteronomy 32, two verses in succession. To me, justice or vindication or punishment. Vengeance, often translated. To me, vengeance, I will pay, I will pay, I will repay. So there's no verb in the first little clause. And this is actually an example of the fact that Hebrew or Greek can do this. Hebrew does it readily. There's no, I think this is right, there's no Hebrew verb that means I have something. But you say something is to me, right, which is called the dative of possession. So you use the linking verb and the dative. So there is to me a people means I have a people, right? So vengeance is to me means I have vengeance. Vengeance is mine. And, of course, it's God speaking. And then antapadoso is from antapadidomi. If you just kind of put your finger over the first six letters, you can see doso, right? So, and it means to pay back, and I will repay. And that's a quote from Deuteronomy 32, and then, which I think is part of the covenant threats and blessings, curses and blessings section. And then in the second line, we have krene kyrios, tan la'ana too, which is easy enough. The Lord, now it's the liquid stem verb, krino, and one of circumflex is what shows us that it is a future indicative rather than a present indicative. So it could just be krino, krines, krine, right? But the accent would be over the penult. And one of the patterns that liquid stem verbs exhibit is that in the second principal part, they often act like epsilon contract verbs. So this is actually, that explains the circumflex. Krine, it would be the form. How they made sense of this before you had accent marks, I don't have the foggiest idea. I think they just grew up speaking Greek and ate a lot of feta cheese. I think feta cheese helps when it comes to the rules of accenting. So the Lord will judge the people of him, right? So again, in a sense, basic Old Testament and New Testament theology, that is, God is God. He cannot be spurned with impunity, right? Unfortunately, the Enlightenment was wrong, right? Let's see, what would be the opposite of I think, therefore I am? It would be God is, therefore I am, or something like that. You know, God's word says so, therefore I am, maybe? Yeah, yeah. I just saw, by the way, oh, here will be a little advertisement. Wipfenstock actually just published Dr. Schumacher's dissertation, which is a study of anthropology, and it's got the cleverest title in history, Who Do I Say That You Are? And it's a comparison of some Finnish scholars and their claim that Luther's anthropology allows for the orthodox doctrine of theosis. And Schumacher kind of takes this apart and shows that it's not a valid reading of Luther. So, yeah, but I think that's a wonderful title. Who Do I Say That You Are? Yeah, yeah. So, and Dan apparently likes it too. So, yeah, yeah. So the punchline, verse 31, which is a very sobering thought, and reminds us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We have no verb. We have phaberon, which is a neuter singular nominative, could be accusative, and we have ta empezain. This is from empipto. And it means to fall into, and it's the aorist imperative, and it you supply the linking verb. So the act of falling into the hands of God, the living one, then you supply is phaberon, fearful. We had phaberon early on, earlier in this chapter, I think. I was looking for it a minute ago, but I couldn't spot it. Just an adjective that means fearful. So the typical translation, it is a fearful thing, and what's the it? To fall into the hands of the living God. So.
It's interesting that tone for the infinitive.
Yeah.
The
yeah, yeah. It really makes it clear that we're substantizing the infinitive. It's a verbal noun, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the infinitive by definition is a verbal noun, and that really brings out the nominal aspect of it. Right. Yeah, the act of falling. In English, we have gerunds, right? So we could say, falling into the hands of the living God is fearful. Greek doesn't have gerunds, right? Just participles, as we all know and love, right? So.
Can I ask you something about those participles?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me say, you know, outside the indicative, you know, tense, you know, it's really the participles aren't talking about tense or anything. It's
yeah, just aspect.
Aspect.
Right.
It's focusing on connection. It focuses upon action.
Mm-hmm, right.
What are those, you know, focus upon action? What are you really saying when you say, oh, it's a focus upon action?
Right.
On connection.
Yeah.
What are you really saying there?
Yeah.
Focus upon action seems like you're saying nothing, you know. So, you know.
Right. Right. The so-called aorist participle.
Right.
Right. Well, and apparently, basically speaking, that's right. So aorist, not seen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
From horao. Right. Aorist, not seen. Different, actually, will different grammarians talk about it, this in a different way? This, you know, Dr. Vels, who is a part of this debate, scholarly debate, I think he actually leaves it vague on purpose just because the context is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But, for instance, Stanley Porter, whose name you might know, he's a very prominent scholar and has written a very large book on this topic. He says that the aorist stem communicates sort of background. It's kind of just the action is just back there. And the present stem brings it closer into view. I mean, that's his way of trying to explain this distinction. Another scholar, a Baptist guy, Buist Fanning, who, again, is another major player, and he teaches at Dallas Theological Seminary, he wrote a big book about the same time Porter did. As I recall, his way of trying to describe this distinction is to talk about the helicopter view of the parade rather than the street-level view. This is one of the illustrations he uses. So that the aorist, you're just up there and you see the whole thing, but it's not seen in its continuation, it's not seen in any of its parts, it's just happening. Whereas on the street level, you could say, oh, this is ongoing, this is beginning. So all those inceptive, connative, progressive translations that we give to present stem forms are, you know, that's his way of trying to explain the thing. It's a very difficult thing to conceptualize. Yeah, so when Dr. Vels says focus on action, he sort of means, as you said, simple focus on action. It's just happening. But the connection thing is his attempt to try to say, look, in context, it could be the beginning of the action, it could be the ongoing nature of the action, could be that the action is iterative, it's repeated over and over again. And, of course, the context is the king, right? So I'm reading the New Testament a lot of the times, and I'll see a present stem verb form, and I'll go, what's the significance of that in this context? And the answer is, I can't tell. Yeah, it's because I haven't eaten enough feta cheese.
Right.
Yeah, so if I did more of that, then I could know more because I would be in a bathroom more because I think it constipates you, doesn't it? Doesn't a lot of cheese? You're from Wisconsin, JJ. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How does that work in Wisconsin?
I don't know.
Never heard that. Maybe it's the feta cheese. Could I say, is that okay to say it on the internet? Now that's broadcast to the world.
Constipated.
Yeah, constipated, yeah. So
sorry. I think there's a direct correlation between Wisconsinites and their Greek level, you know, because they have spent so much time.
I think so. That's why JJ is such a great guy and... And that's called cheese envy.
Yes.
Yeah. Although the Packers, we don't want to talk about that, do we?
No.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God and his servant, Kurt Warner. Oh, touchdown Jesus. Sorry about that. Yeah. Actually, the defense won. So it's a very good question. And actually grammarians try to articulate it in different ways. So I actually rather like the way Dr. Vell says it, just because it's a little vague, you know, and it allows you for flexibility for contextual factors. So, yep. So, well, okay, verse 32 is a new paragraph, and I need to go back to this conference. So, but, you know, that's how committed I am to Greek Club. As it means I got to drive my car a little more instead of just living here on campus the way I always do. So we'll stop here and we'll pick up next week.
Apparently my wife said to you on Saturday morning, how come you didn't wear your sandals? Or did she just think of saying that to you?
She thought of saying it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, just know that you said that. I know.